up on the latest edition of Serie Awesome. Juve are out of the Champions League at the last 16 stage again. We'll pick apart the reactionary hot takes. Inter's early exit from Europe is behind them now, as are the rest of the teams in the Serie A table. We'll discuss their latest showing. Milan win, and it wasn't thanks to the usual suspects. What's ahead for the Rossoneri? And Victor Osimhen is back with a bang for Napoli. We'll have this and more on the way. Hello, welcome into Serie Awesome. Kay Murray, Matteo Bonetti, Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini with you. We will not wait. We'll get straight into it. Juventus are out of the Champions League after losing to Porto on the away goal rule in extra time of their last 16 second leg tie. The reaction has been dramatic, so what we're going to do is we are going to take apart the hot takes. First hot take we've seen after this exit, it's Ronaldo's fault. Mina, Cristiano Ronaldo, criticism rife after the game, many pointing the finger at him. It's something that annoyed you.
Yeah, it's something that annoyed me because I've never been on board with this whole, like, if somebody or if a team wins, it's all Ronaldo. Like, even the comeback against Atletico Madrid, you know, the performance, whatever it is, he has rescued Juventus a lot of times. And sometimes it's always been, oh, well, if it wasn't for Ronaldo, Juventus would have lost. And I also think that it's very harsh to blame him for this. I'm not saying that he didn't make mistakes. I'm not saying that he had a terrible night of football. He had all of these things, but so did Demiral. So did Bentancur in the first leg. So did Pirlo with his tactics. So did... It's a group effort to lose this badly to a team that went down to 10 men on the 54th minute. And I understand that as the leader of the group who's being paid a lot of money and considered the superstar, the man that is supposed to take this team over the edge to win them the very trophy they have coveted now since, what, 1996, then he is going to be the man to take all the blame, because otherwise what's the point in investing 360 odd million on this player if he's not going to win that title? But I also think that there comes a time where there's so many things to criticize in Juventus that blaming Ronaldo on it at this moment just seems so idiotic, frankly speaking. I understand why he'll get most of it, because he is the face of it, in much the same way Lionel Messi does when Barcelona keep getting thrashed in the Champions League. But I don't think it's fair, because why should others get away with what they're doing badly?
Isn't it funny, though, that the general consensus seems to be, at least from the journalists that I follow on Twitter, I'm just using them as an example, Barcelona gets knocked out and the message is, Messi doesn't deserve this, his teammates need to do better. And then Ronaldo gets knocked out and everyone's saying, no, they need to sell Ronaldo this summer. These are the two best players that we have been lucky to watch for the last 10 plus seasons. Players that are now in their mid-30s that need a better supporting cast. Cristiano Ronaldo is a much different player. He had to redefine himself. He's no longer the winger that can get by anyone with pace. And he's still been able to score a goal a game. He didn't have the best game. That's absolutely true. The fingers, though, need to be pointed at the top. I don't know if it's for clicks or for whatever that everyone's now saying, oh, Ronaldo, he's the problem. He's got to be sold. If Juventus want to reset, it has to be without Ronaldo. Okay, so let's say you do get rid of Ronaldo and you do clear yourself of that wage. Who are you going to get that's going to give you what Ronaldo does? Are they just suddenly going to say, we're going to get Erling Haaland? This isn't a video game. You're not just going to get Erling Haaland. You had your chance to get Erling Haaland for 20, 25 million euro, and you blew it. Now Erling Haaland's worth about a quarter of a billion euro. You're probably not going to get him because guess what? There's a ton of other teams that are going for the same player. So to just magically think that you're going to replace Cristiano Ronaldo with another once-in-a-generation type superstar is absolute nonsense. Not only does Ronaldo score a goal a game, he's also the symbol of the league. He's the face of the entire club and Serie A. He is the most marketable athlete in the world. He sells the most kits out of anyone. And players will look at Serie A and look at Cristiano Ronaldo's there, and it adds a ton of prestige for the league. Cristiano Ronaldo makes Serie A more valuable. This is the simple truth. And it's not like he's not doing well. He's scoring a goal a game. He had a poor game, but we have to look at it deeper. It's so easy to just say, oh, Ronaldo should have scored. He was going up against a Porto defense that was sitting back in a back five. There was hardly any room. The only way that Juventus could attack was crosses into the box, which you have to have luck. You have to, random bobbles happening your way. Pepe was back there, was great in the air. He was snuffing a lot of those chances out. It's so short-sighted and honestly, to me, so ignorant to put this loss on Cristiano Ronaldo when it had to happen over the two legs where we saw Bentancur, suicidal mistake, Mary Demiral, naive defensive penalty to give away. I honestly can't believe that we're even having this conversation, but this is actually something that's going on in the media. Like, people are actually blaming Ronaldo and saying they need to get rid of him. Like, I feel like I'm losing my mind right now.
Everybody wants to make everything simple. That's inevitable. And it happens every time anyone talks about sport. We get lost in headlines rather than proper conversations. And I don't think it's realistic or sensible to look at Ronaldo and go, you're the reason they lost this. It's ridiculous. As you've said, he's their top scorer in Serie A this season. He scores goals by the bucket load. I actually think it's a really important point you raised about his marketing value and what he brings to Juventus and Serie A. That is very real. And I've seen some columns this morning talking about the Ronaldo signing globally as a failure for Juventus. Well, what's your measuring stick? If you want to talk in sporting terms, we can be really clear cut on this, because this was not implicit. This was explicit. Agnelli said it. Allegri said it when he was still a manager there. Others at the club said it out loud. We want to win the Champions League. And I do at this point think Ronaldo personally, he's still there. It can still happen next season. I think he's not going to win the Champions League with Juventus. That's my opinion. And that's all it is. So if you want to judge it on that, you can call it a move that hasn't worked out. But if you want to judge it globally, then yeah, you have to take into account what it's done for the club's image, what it's done for the club's advertising deals, what it's done for the league's advertising deals. These are much, much bigger picture, and it's a much more nuanced conversation. I think that equally, the conversation about whether or not Juventus are best off proceeding with Ronaldo is a nuanced conversation, because it's not about whether or not he's good enough. He's scoring the goals. He's evidently contributing lots to that team. But you have built a team now that does not work for Ronaldo. You're trying to transition to this team that is younger, that is newer, that is going to play, as long as Pirlo is your manager anyway, a particular brand of football that, let's be frank about it, because I think we've danced around it at times this season. Pirlo does want his team to press high up the pitch. He does want to play that high tempo football. And sometimes lately, for instance, at the weekend before this game, they did it really well without Ronaldo. That doesn't mean Ronaldo's the problem. It doesn't mean that Ronaldo is a bad player. It means that you've made a team in which Ronaldo might not fit. And that's your fault. You have to plan as a club for how you're going to use this superstar that you've spent all this money into. So you have choices now about how to proceed with that. Maybe you think these personnel can still do it, or maybe you don't. But to me right now, it doesn't work. You've got two different teams.
No, Matthew,
can I just rephrase? Sorry, Mina. Can I just rephrase that? I don't know if it's more Ronaldo doesn't work for the team. I think it's more the midfield. And overall, the strikers don't work for Ronaldo. I mean, look at the player that they were trying to sign last summer. It was Edin Dzeko. Edin Dzeko has a lot more Karim Benzema than Alvaro Morata does. Morata's a player that likes to go with defenders. Dzeko's a player with a very good touch, back to goal, that can be a facilitator for the wingers like he has been at Roma, and who I still think is very underrated. So I think they had an idea of, right, this is the kind of player that needs to play next to Ronaldo that will take the attention from the defenders. Alvaro Morata's been good this season, but he's not Edin Dzeko, and he doesn't have the characteristics of Karim Benzema, who Ronaldo had a brilliant partnership with. Ronaldo.
So now this is Morata's fault?
No, I'm not saying
the guy has delivered the most amount of assists for Ronaldo. He's delivered the most amount of assists for any striker. Like, how is this anything to do with him? What, they have a midfield that has not a single one ball player?
I wasn't blaming Morata at all. I just said Morata had a good season, but they're trying to find players that would work best for Ronaldo. So clearly they knew these are the kinds of characteristics of players that Ronaldo does the best with. That's why Morata was not plan A. He was plan B. Edin Dzeko was plan A. And I agree about the midfield. Like, we've talked about this ad nauseum, that the midfield simply is not good enough. And you need to give Ronaldo a stronger supporting cast when he's in his mid-30s. Juventus didn't do that.
Okay, but I think that we have to discuss two things. Like, you know, there's the sporting project and there's the financial project. And I think that somewhere along the line, these two got mixed up. And now we look at sort of the Real Madrid project, which was the Galacticos project. This is sort of the poor man's version, because we can only afford one Galactico in Juventus, whereas Real Madrid obviously afforded about a bunch, yeah? Now, if we're talking from a purely commercial, financial, my background is banking. If you look at what, you know, the kind of coverage, the kind of value that Ronaldo has brought to Juventus, it is immeasurable. I mean, if you look at how many people go on YouTube and watch sort of the derby between Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, it didn't even reach a million. If you look at the fact that Juventus Crotone gets on regular basis, like 4 million people went to watch that, much more than the derby, the Milan derby, it just goes to show you how much Ronaldo has brought to this team on a branding level. If you want to talk about success and branding success and the fact that Juventus's name is now mentioned around the world and people who follow Juventus or people who just follow Ronaldo come to watch Juventus, then he has been an absolute success on an absolute financial level. Everyone knows who they are now. De Ligt came a lot of the time because of the fact that there's Ronaldo. Players think of them. Haaland wanted to come to Juventus, but just didn't feel he was going to be given the chances up front. So I'm not sure that they entirely blew it, more rather the fact that he knew with players like Ronaldo up front, he might not get the chances that he wants to grow, to show himself, to be the top scorer for the likes of Borussia Dortmund at this level. But if we're talking about a sporting project, if you are going to bring in a Galactico, you have to be able to afford it. It's like buying a house in 90210 and not being able to afford a car to get around. There's no point having that, like, that postcode. If you can't have Ronaldo and then fill it with mediocrity and just hope he continues to rescue you, you don't have enough money to employ a good coach. You don't have enough money to employ a midfield. It just seems like he's become a giant plaster, and the hope is that he'll just continue to rescue the side. But again, this is not his fault. On a sporting level, the team has regressed with him. Not because he's not the world's most outstanding player. He is. It's because Juventus lost their values, which was to build on the pitch. It was never a team that cared a lot about branding, but it is now. It is a team that only seems to care about branding. So everything that glitters and shines, the great football, Pirlo is going to catch a couple of headlines because he's Pirlo. They've lost their values in when it comes to building a side. They've also lost a lot on management level that was effective and sensible. Javier Ribalta, the head of scouting, the man who brought in Alexandro, who brought in Paul Pogba, who brought in several, Paulo Dybala, not that, you know, I'm his biggest fan, but, you know, there was a man there who really knew how to uncover gems. There was Beppe Marotta, who offered a sensible voice, you know, experience, running, athleticism, that coincided with everything that, you know, Paratici did and Agnelli did. I think there's been so many changes now that there's just not enough of a conversation up top. It's just a case of, wait, we've heard of Rabiot. He's supposed to be really good. Let's bring him in. You know, like Ramsey's amazing for Arsenal. Arthur, it doesn't matter that both of those are injury prone. It doesn't matter that we're thinking of making Dybala's contract like 400 million a year, despite the fact that every year he misses a giant chunk. I was looking at how many injuries there are. There's no more planning. So the plan, if the plan is to win on a commercial level with Ronaldo, then it's a success. If you're Ed Woodward, you'd be really proud of this deal. But if it's a sporting level, then it's been a failure.
So that leads us nicely to the next big hot take that came after this result. And that is, Pirlo should be sacked. He's tactically inept. What do you say, Nikki?
We've talked loads about Pirlo and tactics. It's interesting. I think it sounds like Mina agrees with me a lot in terms of the sort of messiness of how this is set up. I don't think Pirlo is the best tactical manager you could have. And I think that if we want to be really honing in on what's happened over the last 3 years, Juventus have gone out of the Champions League to Ajax, to Lyon and to Porto. I'm not trying to do down any of those teams, but again, when you're bringing in Ronaldo, your idea of yourself, your idea of your stature in the European game, it's not the same as if you've gone out to, not that necessarily they're at their peaks right now, but Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, who are at their peak at the moment. I think if you have that idea of yourself and you're building that brand image of yourself, indeed, as look at us, the global force, these are not the teams you're supposed to lose to. And there is a part of me that asks myself if Allegri had never left. I know he had his own disappointment his last season there. Would this team have done better in some of these games? Honestly, I think so. I think Allegri is a better tactician than Andrea Pirlo, certainly. And I think that could have carried something. I think Pirlo is a worse tactician than Maurizio Sarri, who was there last year and who also went out of the Champions League in a pretty flat way. So no, he's not a great tactician. And no, for all the reasons that Mina and I have just talked about, it doesn't mean that's the big problem. It doesn't mean that it's his fault. It's the fault of of poor planning. And again, I sort of want to hone in on this a little bit. I think there is something interesting happening at Juventus. I think when I look at the weekend's game with Chiesa and Morata, who really had me getting out of my seat against Lazio, they were 1-0 down and they played brilliantly. And that's a small view response, right? Because I can criticize lots of other games this season, but there's something good happening there. The problem is you have got no coherence in how you've planned it. And I think I was talking even a week before about how Chiesa, who in my opinion is the future of this team, the one you need to build everything around, was not getting to do his thing really because you had such an unbalanced midfield, because you had Aaron Ramsey and Alexandro and someone else playing outside them that day, all pushing up on the left. And then poor Chiesa on the far side becoming the, well, we have to balance this somehow and drop back further. I think Chiesa is brilliant. I think that there is a core here that you can turn into something else. But it's a mismatch at the moment. You've got a hodgepodge of different ideas all being squeezed together. And maybe a better tactician in the short run could make more of it. Maybe, again, not maybe, I believe Allegri would get more from this squad today. And that's obvious because Pirlo's been doing the job for 5 minutes and been doing the job, not just at Juventus, doing this job for 5 minutes. But do I think that Pirlo is the thing that we should all be talking about as, well, this team would be fine if he wasn't in charge? No, I think there's much deeper issues than that.
I definitely want to get on to Federico Chiesa, but just to put the lid on this Champions League exit, I just want to bring up that free kick. Now, Capello called the moment unforgivable, speaking afterwards. It was the Oliveira free kick that went under the wall where both Cristiano Ronaldo and Rabiot jumped up and turned their backs to the ball. Pirlo, however, Matteo, said that he wouldn't have done anything differently and he felt that the players didn't sense the danger on that free kick. Naive?
Well, I mean, in hindsight, absolutely naive. And a lot of teams now are even laying a player. If you want the wall to jump, and it's the most important free kick of the game, that's maybe the final chance that Porto have. What you see teams doing now is laying a player right behind the wall so you can actually have the wall jump and you don't have to risk what happened with Oliveira. Or you keep the wall there and you don't jump. And you trust that the keeper from that distance is going to have that post covered. So the two things that could have happened didn't. The absolute worst scenario did. And it was, to me, it was heartbreaking because I actually thought that Juventus, we haven't really even talked about the game. We've talked about, you know, Pirlo and Ronaldo, but Juventus created a ton of danger. Even if it was just tons of balls in from Juan Cuadrado, I mean, you think of the crossbar that Cuadrado hit, the underside of the crossbar, the chances that Chiesa had apart from his two goals. Chiesa had his best game as a professional, really showing that he is up to the highest level and up to the occasion. And I couldn't be happier for him because by all accounts, he's an ultimate professional behind the scenes. I thought Juventus were unlucky, but unfortunately, that's not how it works when it's two legs. They didn't do it over the course of two legs. They did it much better in the second leg, but the first leg was an abomination. It was one of the worst games that I've seen. And that's ultimately what came and bit them.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, we can talk about the free kick. We can talk about mistakes here and there. You just don't do this level. You don't commit this level of mistakes in a Champions League match, whoever your opponent is. And Porto are by no means some easy opponent. They've got a great coach. What I mean, Legion of Boom defense, you know, like it is just, it was spectacular. The fact that they fought so hard, how high that they were trying to, they still tried to win the game, even with 10 men. They never gave up their ambition towards the end. And that's something to, you know, to really applaud them for. Like, you know, I agree with everything that Nikki and Matteo just said as well. And the case of the matter is that we can blame Ronaldo, we can blame Pirlo, but the fact is that you've built a house of cards in rainy London. And if you're going to do that and it rains, then you can't just blame the wind. You have to blame the fact that your house is made of cards. And at this moment in time, there's a massive imbalance. Allegri, if you're going to build a team that's based on good individuals and you put them all together, then you need a pragmatist in the helm. Instead, they went for two guys with philosophies, Sarri and Pirlo. It's not going to work as well, right? So you probably should have stuck with the pragmatist approach. But, you know, this is what it is. And I hope that almost gets really bad so that huge changes can be made at the top.
Can I just say something about Pirlo? I wanted to weigh in on it really quickly because Juventus signed him knowing that he's someone who would have to grow through the season. I mean, they couldn't have expected much of anything, really, from a guy who not even managed his son's five-a-side game in Manhattan. This is someone that was obviously going to have growing pains, that was obviously going to need plenty of time. So to sack him now, I mean, it's so unrealistic. And to get who? Like, who's out there right now that you're like, that's right, exactly, we're going to get him and we're gonna win the Scudetto? No, it's so many different... Well, we know that's not going to happen. Like,
why?
That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen right now.
Bring back Allegri. If I was Agnelli, I'd sack all of these guys and bring back Allegri.
Right, but you're
not. He was the only one
not.
From the start who said, I don't want a superstar. Just get me a midfielder. I only have Lamina on the bench after 2017.
But even so, would Allegri come back right now at this moment?
I honestly think so. But we know it's not going to happen.
The other opportunity hasn't come for Allegri. I thought Allegri by now would have landed another big job. I think it's an oversight by some clubs that he hasn't landed another big job. So he might come back if he was called. And I agree that he would do better than what you have. But it's just not planning, is it? It's not planning. Where's the idea? Like, there needs to be
they've wasted 2 years now with two managers paying two wages because they wanted to suddenly play this amazing football. It hasn't worked out. They never really played that under Maurizio Sarri. Now what? They're going to say, you know what? We were wrong all along the last 2 years and we had to lose in the round of 16 because we didn't have a coherent identity. And now we're going to go back to the guy who we wanted to get rid of because he wasn't fun enough. Like, it just seems so wild.
It wasn't
to me.
Fun enough.
All right.
He talks about horses right. all the time in his press conferences. Come on.
So to put some positivity on it, and we'll pick up from where Nikki was talking. Mina, let's talk about Federico Chiesa, because that's definitely a spot that they can smile about, Juventus fans.
Yeah, it's interesting because Nikki was saying something about the fact that Juventus had already bought in Kulusevski. It was like, is there really a need to bring in Federico Chiesa? Like, and I sort of completely agreed with that. I'm like, listen, you know, you have one striker, you have no ball playing midfielder barring Arthur, who's just arrived and injury prone. Like, wait, there's other concerns than to bring in just another player to play out wide. We've already got a wonder kid in Kulusevski. I'm going to be honest, like when he was at Fiorentina, there was this click that once happened over Christmas and New Year, and he came back when Pioli was still coach and had a word with him and his father, and they'd spoken a lot during that time off. And then he came back to Fiorentina, he had that magnificent end to the season with Pioli. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, like when you switch it on, there is nobody like you. Your talent, your vision, your energy, your desire is really unrivaled. He's, for me, one of the best Italians I've seen in a really long time. And in fact, he's the first Italian since 1999 to score in a Champions League knockout stage. Like, that's crazy for an Italian team. So... But, you know, you thought of all of this, and I did really genuinely worry that if, you know, when you see Bernadeschi and you think there's Kulusevski, that he might not be able to live up to what he produced. But he's really leveled up. I think that's also interesting because I'm not a huge, like I said, you know, I'm not here to defend Pirlo, but maybe there is a certain level of freedom, or sometimes, you know, I think there's tactical imbalances, like the fact that he had to defend yesterday and the fact that he didn't always track back at the right time caused problems for the defence. I don't want him to be in that role. I want him to have full freedom because I feel like when he's tasked with doing too much, it's too overwhelming. But he is such a special talent. And these are reasons why. He's the reason why. Barella is the reason why. I'm really happy for the Euros coming up.
Oh, I'm as excited about the future of the national team as I have been in a really long time. There is an awkward but obvious thing to point out, though, off what you just said, Mina, which is, I watch Chiesa and think the same thing sometimes. You need to let the reins off this guy and just let him play, but you can't do that and let Ronaldo play at the same time. And that's kind of bringing us full circle just back to, we're not saying Ronaldo's the problem because he isn't. But what is the problem is if you want this team to balance right now, it doesn't.
Yeah.
But Chiesa actually works so hard off the ball, and I'm with both of you. I think that before the season started, I was actually expecting Kulusevski to be much more involved than Chiesa. I was worried that Chiesa wouldn't get the time that he would because he was a very incomplete player at Fiorentina. He missed a ton of chances. I think that bringing statistics into it, which, you know, is funny because I always say I hate them, but here I am again making a point with statistics.
What's his K-pass,
Matteo? I've got that, but you're going to have to pay for it. He, over the course of two seasons, I think he took the most shots, which his goals to, no, sorry, shots to goals ratio, something like that, was the lowest in Serie A. So he took the most shots that led to the least goals. So he was the least efficient attacker in Serie A. And I don't need that to tell me what I see with the eye test, and I'm sure both of you have seen as well, is he missed a lot of chances at Fiorentina. He went down to the ground far too easy. And I just thought, right, when you're at Juventus and you're in a rotation and you get a chance and you miss a few chances, then maybe you're on the bench for three games. I was worried that it would be that sort of pattern and that it end up being a Bernardeschi situation where a clearly talented player, inconsistent, needed time to grow and didn't get that at Juventus because of the instant pressure. It's been the opposite. I mean, Chiesa has been maybe one of their best players. He's really shown that he has the personality to play at the highest level, to be important in the biggest moments of his career. And I can't wait to see his development because he's also a very exciting young player.
Let's get to some league action then. Inter beat Atalanta 1-0. It was a big game. It went the way of the league leaders. Inter is 6 clear at the top. But was there a feeling that this was a big step on the way to the Scudetto, the way that the players were all waiting on the sidelines to celebrate those 3 points? We saw pictures and videos afterwards of the locker room celebrations. It must have been a big deal for them too, Nikki.
It does feel a bit like these last few weeks I'm becoming a stuck record, because I think I said this after they beat Lazio and then I said it after they beat Milan. But yes, this is a big step towards the Scudetto, and I think it felt like it clearly for the players. This was a really intense situation, I felt like, for Inter. For the first time, they're now the clear front runners, all right? So they've been behind Milan for the whole season, and lots of people might have said, yes, okay, they're still the favourites, but that's not the same as being out in front. So you're out in front, and in the weekend that you're playing, Juventus have already won a difficult game against Lazio. Milan have won their game as well. Yes, you've still got the buffer, but your gap has closed and you're playing Atalanta, who are in form, scored 12 goals in the preceding three games. So really coming in hot. And it's Atalanta. Like, if there's any one team in Serie A that you know is going to show you no respect as a big team, is going to come and play their game and do it at tempo, it's this one. And they did, actually. Atalanta did come and play their game, and they were in that first half going 100 miles an hour, and Inter just dealt with it. There were chances, there were moments, there were things where things got a little bit hairy perhaps, but I didn't feel like Atalanta were getting the clear-cut openings that I thought that sort of tempo would get them eventually. It did feel like all of that energy sort of broke on the wall of that defense. And then, yes, Inter basically scored with their only shot on target, although probably I would say despite that, they had the better chances. Lukaku certainly should have scored. I just felt like it was such a confident performance from Inter, and we have had plenty of fun over the last year and a half with Antonio Conte coming in and saying, this is not going to be Pat's end anymore. We're just going to be Inter. We're just going to be a team that goes and wins games. This is exactly where you expect Inter to show that bit of frailty. And look, I will keep saying it as long as it's true. 12 games is still a long way to the end of the season. It's possible to blow it from here. But if you had said to me before this run of the last few weeks, they're going to beat Lazio 3-1, they're going to beat Milan 3-0, and then at the end of a weekend when the other two have both won, they're going to keep a clean sheet against Atalanta and win, I would have been, well, I mean, it can't go any better than that. That's amazing. And they've done it. So I understand, especially because it was only 1-0, the players at the end getting into that moment and thinking, yes, here's another huge hurdle between here and the end of the season that we can cross off a list. And look, Milan is still 6 points behind us. Juventus have gone back to 10 points behind us, pending the game in hand. We're in control.
I was on the call for this game on ESPN Plus, and I felt like the first half was one of the easiest games to read from a tactical level. And I know that we don't often go deep into tactics on this show. I actually find it most of the time quite boring. But this game, it was 180 degrees polar opposite approaches. And it was kind of like the cartoon version of what Gasperini wants to do and what Conte wants to do, where you had Inter, they lose possession. Everyone retreats back into a low block. Everyone behind the ball absorb. You get into your organized defensive shape. You have Atalanta who lose the ball. Everyone forward pressing the ball, trying to get the high line. So The thing that we were talking about before the game was, how is Atalanta's high line going to deal with Romelu Lukaku? Because we know that Inter, in these games, having a whole week to prepare, will have studied Atalanta. They know exactly what they're expecting. They know that there's spaces to get in behind. And I was just wondering, what defender of Atalanta is actually going to be able to deal with Romelu Lukaku? And I went back after the game and I thought, right, who are the defenders this season who have actually gotten the better of Lukaku? I think Giorgio Chiellini, you could say, in that one game Juventus against Inter did very well in Lukaku. Other than that, I was drawing blanks. I thought Cristian Romero was excellent with his pace, staying in front of Lukaku. I thought Bledim Cimicic as well had a very good game. But it was completely different approaches. And this was the most Juventus Conte performance from Inter, where they get the goal, everyone behind the ball, and you know that you already know it's a lost cause. There's no way to get back against this team because defensively they're so damn good.
It's funny, there was this moment where Cassano was talking about the youth of Italy, and he was saying that they don't get opportunities. I think they're getting more opportunities, but nonetheless, he said all Italians really care about is playing out from the back. And when you watch Pirlo's Juve, you think, yeah, that's so true, like Napoli. But what I love so much, I guess, is when teams just stick to who they are and they do what they do really well. And for me, I think that's a source of pride, you know, like, isn't if you have the back line of Porto, you should play that football. If you have, you know, the midfield of Barcelona, you should play that football, whatever it is. And I think at the beginning of the season, when you saw Conte trying to be a little bit more like an Atalanta, more of a, you know, let's try to score more goals, even if we concede a few, it was irritating me because I'm not entirely sure that he's a coach who can always extract the quality out of a team. He's better at masking deficiencies. That's what I think was so great about his Italian side, for example, the national team. And I think this is what it is. It's a return to who we are. You know, it's we are a team that has a phenomenal defense. We are a team that know how to fight for every ball. We are a team that has a strong mentality, that we're going to get Eriksen to get there and start doing all his defensive duties as well. That's what we know how to do, and that's how we are going to win. Now, if you watch this game against Atalanta, what bothers me is Atalanta perhaps didn't stick to their identity. I do think they went into this without being their usual overwhelming self. And you notice that teams, when they don't stick to their identity or overthink things, sometimes Sampdoria do this a lot under Ranieri, these when problems happen, right? When Pep Guardiola overthinks his Champions League matches. And I think that when Conte has decided to be Conte, they were outpassed, they were dispossessed way more than Atalanta. They weren't as precise as Atalanta. They had no shots on goal in the first half, but it doesn't matter. It's kind of like exactly what you said. It's Juve all over again. The result is the only thing that matters. And when it comes to actual man management and getting everyone to paddle in the right direction and all together, all for one, I think Conte is the best when it comes to that. He really will get people to run through brick walls for him. And on this occasion, even if he made a bad decision in starting for me, Vidal, I would have loved Eriksen from the start of the season. Can you imagine the quality that Inter might have built by now had they had Eriksen playing in that role from the start? I can understand the Vidal physicality Atalanta thing, but again, I just feel like they're so much better when they have two, because then you just shut out Brozovic and there's really not much else coming on from Inter. But I think that when you are sticking to your identity and you feel it gives you a sense of confidence, and you know, the closer they're getting, I can't ever have anything to say about a team that's gone 7 games, conceded only 2 goals, and has trashed huge opponents, including the likes of Milan, Lazio, and maybe not trashed Atalanta, but got the points that they needed.
I think it was really interesting, Matteo, you brought up that Juventus-Conte comparison, and Mina's just picked it up as well. I think it's fascinating, even on like a more basic level than that, which is, how many times in the last few seasons have we had some team that is aspiring to rival Juventus that has been chasing for a while, and then there'll be a weekend around this time in the season when they'll get to play first and they'll win, and everyone will be looking at this big Juventus game coming up and thinking, oh, that's a tricky one, Juventus could slip it up, and then they just ease through it. And that's just another thing that you go, oh, well, it was just another moment that passed in the night, and here comes another of this. It felt like, for the first time, it felt like to me, Inter are really in that role now. Now Inter are the Juventus of this season. They're the Juventus that has been for the last 9 years in this context. They are in these situations where you're looking at them anymore and going, can they get there? You're looking at them and going, are they going to wobble? And again, 12 games to go.
It hasn't happened yet. Are they going to wobble? They're 10 points clear of Juventus. Juventus do have a game in hand. They do still have to play one another on May 16th. And Juve no longer have Champions League football to worry about. Are there any concerns here?
I'm not worried. I think it's Inter all along. We've been saying it, I think, for a long time that they're the favorites, and now they're proving that. But just to pick up on what Nikki was saying, I find it interesting that you look at now the last nine winners, and then you look at who presumably is going to win this season. Is it that Catenaccio, I'm not even saying it's full-on Catenaccio because that's not what Sarri was trying to do, but Juventus under Conte and Allegri was the most pragmatic big team in Italy. Inter is obviously the most defensive, pragmatic team in the way that they play. They don't open up themselves too much. Is that the way to get results in Serie A? Is it just completely different from other leagues, where in other leagues, I'm not saying this 100% seriously. It's just a fun, random trend that we're not seeing in other big leagues, because other big leagues, the teams that win play completely different football.
No, Juventus have won playing different football, and I won't have these Catenaccio conversations when last season I think Serie A outscored all of the other top five leagues. And it wasn't obviously close.
It's a very attacking league. I know, but the winner hasn't been the most attacking team. That's my point. That's my point. Nikki, come on. Nikki,
There have been seasons in this Juventus nine-season run. There have been seasons when they've been the top-scoring team.
I think it's balance. I think that I see your point, Matteo, in the sense that when you do win, you have to have a good defense. At the end of the day, that's what Conte had at Chelsea. Manchester City is being talked about a lot more this season because of the fact that they've managed to shore up the back line. You know, having a defense is important because it also gives you the platform to launch an attack. If you are secure at the back, you can go full throttle in the forward line. And I think what you had with Conte, and then the, for me, the evolution under Allegri, was that there was, you know, it's pragmatic, it's not defensive. It's a nice balance, you know, it's a secure back line that allows the front line to keep indulging and going forward and allow certain players the freedom that they might want in attacking sense. I do think that's important to note, but they are also the highest, aren't Inter the highest scoring team right now in Serie A?
Inter's defensive solidity is relatively recent. It is the difference, and that's what you're saying, is the balance is the difference.
Yeah. But I do also want to point out that this type of football, and I do think, because I am a Juventus fan, I've seen it win titles, don't get me wrong, but this type of football is not going to win you a Champions League, or if you want to grow as a club and go back to what they've managed, and Inter are the team that won the treble, you know, so there has to be some sort of evolution going forward in terms of a quality-wise, because I said after that game against Milan that, you know, that was a really great performance and I would have liked to have seen them now at the group stage of the Champions League. But if they are to grow, there does need to be some, you know, transplant of tactics somewhere along the lines, because I'm not entirely sure you can, you know, you can win Serie A with these games, but if you're facing the likes of Bayern Munich and you're playing this kind of game, then I'm not entirely sure, because we've seen with Juventus how much it happened and Allegri needs to change that.
I agree with you, but they haven't. I know Matteo is trying to jinx it, but they haven't actually won one yet. They have to finish winning this one first.
Yes, that is true.
Okay, so they've been effective. It's hardly been X-rated football, though, but new story coming out this morning. Cash-strapped Inter have been offered a new multi-million shirt sponsorship by porn company Strip Chat, as their 30-year association with Pirelli is coming to an end. The Serie A giant
demise of Italian values
by Pirelli, and apparently this is an offer that has been made for them to have Strip Chat on their strips. What do you say, Nikki?
Let's go to our porn correspondent, Matteo.
It's true. Matteo is our Cersei Cosmi.
You started this whole theme last week, Matteo. It's all your fault.
Is it Cersei Cosmi's company?
I don't know if it is Cersei Cosmi's
company.
It is a porn company, though.
No, I mean, maybe that was his own adult film.
Antonio Conte becoming more fun.
Oh, yeah, that's true. This is now Fonte, right? That's his new name.
I mean, listen, Cesar Cosmi won, so maybe all this porn stuff is working out.
Is it a PR stunt?
Yeah, if you want me to be boring about it, then I think this is a company that knows that it's not going to have its offer accepted, but can get a headline and people like us to talk about it on our show. But maybe I'm being too cynical.
Oh, my God. And you know what? We're going to have to move on because there's too many puns and it's not the right show to put them on. Milan got a win against Verona. Not the usual suspects making the difference in this one, though. Goals from Krunic and Dalot.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because when
Dalot.
What?
Dalot.
No one knows. Scholars have still been debating after centuries.
But he had Dalot in this game.
Yeah, he did, and it was a great... Okay, any more?
No.
You got any more in the bin?
Okay, get it out of your system.
Thanks, Kay.
I wasn't allowed to use the ones on the intersegment, so I'm just getting a few out now, okay?
So what stood out from this game is that, once again, Milan, half the starting 11 missing, whether it's Benacer, Çalhanoğlu, Ibrahimović, Rebic, Kjaer, list goes on and on, they somehow play better, at least in 2021, compared to when they had a full squad, and that's when they were dropping all the points. And that's why it was weird, the whole chat of, oh, can Milan deal with the injuries? It's like, they actually were only winning when they had Ibrahimović out, when they had all these players missing. That's when I think December, November period, that's when they were killing it in Serie A. And it's only when everyone came back that you see the results of losing and against Spezia and against all these teams. That's when they had mostly a full squad. And it was once again, role players stepping up. Diogo Dalot playing out of position on the left, cutting inside, brilliant goal with his right. Salamakers running absolutely everywhere. Saw Tomori Romagnoli partnership, which is interesting because I think that might be the United partnership as well. At least I hope it is. So huge 3 points because it was against an Ivan Juric Elas Verona that we have been waxing on about all season long, that they are so tough against the big teams. They take you away from your game plan. They overload you. And it was one of the most important 3 points because if they don't pick that up, it's over. Like, it's 100% over for Milan for any sort of Scudetto. And they're not that far away from fifth place. So there's several different subplots developing now in the last few months for the Rossoneri.
You're right. It is Hellas Verona and it is Ivan Juric. And we've talked wax lyrical about this team. And I love this team in the sense that players just play different roles. But I don't think this was your traditional Hellas Verona. I feel like they are a team that play an exhaustive style of play. And they can't manage to play every 3 days, which they have done recently. What was so interesting is in the reverse fixture, Verona were phenomenal because of Barak and Zaccagni that played in trequartista role behind the striker. And they just were everything. They were midfielders, they were creators, they helped out in any way, shape or form that was required. And it made life really tough for Milan. On this occasion, I just felt like those two weren't on their game. In general, Verona had dropped a lot of themselves, a lot of energy, which allowed, of course, Milan to do that. When you're saying about the fact that they seem to be better with all their absences, I wonder if there's a mental thing there. I wonder if it's, okay, we've got Zlatan, we've got, you know, the usual guys at the back. So, well, it's okay, we can sort of take a breath, you know, that we can handle it, we've got quality. Whereas when they do feel like they've got to play with their second string or Dalo or whatever, everyone's there trying to make an impression, they run a little bit harder. I wonder if it's a psychological thing and Pioli says to them, look, we're out with all these guys, you really need to do this. And then there is this case of, okay, let's fight, you know. We've seen that when they are put into a corner and they're asked to fight, like against Roma, they know how to come out and really produce the skills. And I think that's what's so impressive about Pioli, is that how many goal scorers? 15 goal scorers. You know, he has a team and a scheme and a plan for all games. And that's so impressive when you look at how many teams are dependent on certain players, you know, whether it's your Ronaldo's or Lukaku's. This is a side that's really not dependent on anyone, that can make it work with a lot of things because of the game plan, because of the team ethic, because of the harmonious unit, and because what he's created on both a mental and a sporting level. And this is the case that Pioli, for me, is the quintessential pragmatist who has a side and has individuals and sort of creates a game that can get the best out of them. That's not to say that they've been fantastic all along. They do have a lot of squad depth sometimes, actually, when you look at them. I know that we've talked about the fact that they have a lot of players missing, but when you look up front, you know, you've got Hauge, you've got Brahim Diaz, you've got Çalhanoğlu, obviously, like, you know, your Zlatan, Mandzukic, Salamakis, Castillejo. There's a lot of players going forward. So Rebic, Leao, obviously. And I think that they all have a role to play. This is just a team where when the management is good and the scouting is good, then it becomes a lot easier for the coach to actually create a good side.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it comes back to me for Pioli and his inclusivity. I think when you look at this squad and you think that Krunic and Dello had played, 9 games in total between them, including this one. The fact that you have two players like that coming in and deciding a game in March when you really need it, actually, after the last few weeks, it just speaks to someone who's managed to create a group where people who even aren't starting every week do feel involved, do feel like they need to be ready to come in and step in and do something. And I think that's really impressive. There was a stat this weekend which hints at something we've talked about before, which is, I think, Milan are the first team in Serie A since the start of 2020 to reach 100 points. And again, it's that thing of, it might not add up to a title, because if those points come split between two seasons, it is what it is. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Pioli has, again, created something that is really impressive, to be able to look in your squad, bang on this boring drum again, a very young squad, and continue to find players who are willing and able to step in and do something important.
It's a very young squad, but it does look as though they will be keeping Zlatan for another year. It's said to be close to extending his contract. But the club are looking for another centre forward, knowing that Zlatan won't play every game. And the rumours are Andrea Belotti and PSV's Daniel Marlon. Mina Raiola is the agent of both the latter and Ibra, so he'll probably have a little say there. So that's one worth looking out for. Just to end this, it's the biggest game of the weekend, I'd say, in the Serie A calendar. It's Milan against Napoli.
Oh, it's absolutely massive for Napoli. Maybe a last chance, or one of the last. We'll paint it as a last chance, just to make it sound more dramatic, to get fourth place, right? Because that's the only real objective for Napoli, is to finish in the Champions League. And I actually think that they have a squad that's capable of doing a bit of damage in the Champions League if everyone's healthy. And for Milan, once again, you don't pick up 3 points. I'm already scratching 3 points down for Inter, because I can't see this team dropping points with the way that they're playing so well now in 2021 under Conte. It's going to be, yet again, Milan drop points, bye-bye Scudetto.
Okay, so this is interesting, because it brings us on to what we've just seen from Napoli. They had a big win, they had a big player, and Victor Osimhen. But before we just do get into that, did anybody see Sinisa Mihailovic's sideline style in this game?
No.
Now, please go and check.
What was he wearing?
So he had like the...
Oh, the clothes, you mean?
Yeah, the clothes. I think they may have been Jordans on, with a suit. And then he had the kind of Peaky Blinders hat.
Love it. Sinisa and dripping.
He was absolutely...
As usual.
Absolutely. Anyway, go check that out. It's definitely worth looking at. But he said afterwards, we played... They scored. So it looks as though Napoli are back on track. Which sides will they finish ahead of in the table, if you were to guess now, Mina?
Napoli?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, let's see, they're in six. I think that's where they're going to stay.
Oh.
So Roma, Atalanta are going to finish ahead of them?
Yes. Their away form and their away to Milan is not very good. Their home form, you know, I don't know whether it's renaming it to Maradona or something, but it's inspirational. But when you look at their away form in the world of COVID, it's bizarrely poor. And I just feel like they are a team that squanders too many chances. So it becomes really hard.
Who is your today? Who's your finishing top four? Who do you think it would be?
Juve, Milan, Inter, Atalanta.
Same for me. Not in that order.
I have Roma as... I'll give you my order as well. I think it's going to be Inter, Milan, Juventus, Roma. That's my four.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure that we'll all change opinions after next weekend as well.
No, there's some big teams still to me. But that's interesting. Okay, so the other end of it.
If I married Mino Raiola, would I be Mino and Mina?
That would be a great... You know what?
That would be great.
You're onto something here, Mina.
What? Especially when you could rile a few people up, Mina Raiola, by, you know, being the voice piece sometimes and saying what you have to say and annoying a lot of the managers of top clubs.
I think I'd have a great time.
Amazing agent.
Can you imagine Mina Raiola as an agent working for Mino, and the conversation she'd have for clubs if she's trying to sell a player?
What would the plural be, Mini?
Can you imagine Mino Raiola got Dybala as a client?
In Italian, like, oh, Paolo, refer to him as Imini, for sure.
The Mini.
Imini. And mean. So then there's a play on the Mean Girls thing.
Yeah. I'm just creating this world where Mina Raiola is now Paolo Dybala's agent. And just thinking of the conversation.
No, if I have to sit there and talk about him as a Picasso, then I'm telling you right now, I'm quitting. There's a divorce.
Maybe we could make this a segment going forward.
Hashtag Mina Raiola.
Hashtag Mina Raiola. Now I'm not ever going to be able to say his name normal again. All right. Let's go to the other end of the table. Who do you genuinely fear for in the relegation battle?
Oh, this is, can I just say something? Because I feel so bad for Kyle Kraus, the Parma owner. He has spent a lot of money. He's wanting to refurbish the Ennio Tardini. And even he's saying all the right things. He said, we're going to refurbish it no matter what we do. If we go down to Serie B, our plan is to make Parma better than they ever were. And it just sucks because these are the teams I don't want to see go down to Serie B. Torino, Parma, you know, these are teams that I expect to be in the top flight, that Torino especially, they have a good enough players to be there. But if I had to guess right now, the three teams going down, one of them is a surprise. I think Crotone, they're down. Unfortunately, I think at this point, Parma has to be, just because they've squandered too many chances. They were up 2-0 in two games in a row and then drew 2-2. They actually played well against Inter and ended up losing 2-1. They've been so unlucky as well, given that they're playing better. And the third team, I think it's actually going to be a bit of a shocker. I think it's going to be Benevento or Spezia getting dragged into the bottom three, and Cagliari and Torino saving themselves along with Udinese.
Yeah, I think Benevento are getting dragged back at the moment, and it's definitely that thing sometimes with a team that has come up and has managed to ride a wave at the beginning of the season, that when the momentum runs out, getting it back, rebottling that feeling you had, can be quite hard to do. That said, and I do still think that two of those teams, even though nothing is impossible at the bottom of the table, because everyone around you is going to drop more points at the bottom of the table, I do think Crotone and Parma are going to go. The third team is the interesting one. And Torino did lose to Crotone this weekend, and not well either. And I've been quite positive about Davide Nicola, and indeed on this podcast, to hold my hands up, was contrasting him as a much more favourable appointment than Crotone's Serse Cosmi. And Cosmi got the better of him this weekend, quite emphatically. So I don't know. I'm a little worried for Torino as well. And them going down really would be a major, major failure.
Sticking to the witch of this podcast, I don't have much sympathy for a side that decided to go for Marco Giampaolo. Like, what did you expect? So kind of, you know, you deserve your start. Secondly, also cut it. Like, the guy's losing, just let go, you know? When it comes to Davese and Parma, I'm not saying to you if he had started the season, they'd be flying and now like in Europe, but I'm saying as in, it's a shame that that project had to come to an end where you changed entirely to a coach who, Liverani is a good coach, but not for Parma. It's a totally different team.
Is Liverani again, a coach? Are we sure about that? Like, Liverani to sure me seems like he has coach. All the Gav's bad parts of Zeman with none of the positives. Like, what have we seen from Liverani? He sent Lecce down. He's like, oh, we're going to attack. Too bad they were losing 6-2 in every game. And with Parma, it's like, this is a team that's been drilled to play defensive counterattacking football. Yeah. And now he's like, we're going to attack.
Let's play expansive, like, no, progressive
you're
going to
get smashed defensively because this is not the identity of the team. This isn't what's been keeping them up.
But who cares now? Everyone wants just play out from the back. We have to all just attack. It doesn't matter if none of us know how to defend. It's all got to be Inzaghi's Benevento, you know, who incidentally has learned that sometimes you need to defend. They've actually gone the bet, like they've understood that a little bit better now. But to be honest, you know, at the end of the day, when you got rid of Davese, that was a great story. He had done so much for your team. They were really improving and they were really tough to face. Like you said, I mean, Parma, even last year, they gave these big teams a run for their money. I mean, do you remember what he did to Godin? I mean, they did have Kulusevski and stuff, but they were so fun to watch. So getting rid of them, like, what did you expect was going to happen? I think that with Stroppa, I felt very sorry for him at Crotone because I felt like that team wasn't psychologically well-balanced. I think they all had players that wanted to play a good game of football, perhaps not really fighters, not really the best team to have when you're trying to survive. Ideally for me, I would like Benevento to go down. Not because I don't like...
Poor people.
That sounds so awful because, you know, it's a nice team that fight a lot and have created some, you know, they've got
one witch allowed in the Serie A.
Exactly. Yeah. Mina doesn't want to compete with any more witches.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so clever.
Can I just say something about these managers? Since we always talk about, I think these small managers that get a job at a small team, they're smarter than maybe a lot of people make them out to be. They're like, if I attack, if I take this team that is really poor and I attack and I get killed 5-4, everyone's going to love me. Everyone's going to say, oh, but yeah, they play with that. This cavalier spirit and they're attack minded and he's modern. And it's like, yeah, you just sent them down to City of B because that's what everyone wants now. Everyone just wants teams to blindly attack. What about a good old fashioned Catenaccio relegation team that's like, you know what? We're going to sit with 11 players behind the ball. We're going to score on one set piece and we are going to bore you to death. But guess what? We're going to pick up that point against Inter. We're going to pick up 3 points against Spezia. We're going to stay up in Serie A. But no one, that manager will get crushed because everyone only wants to play one style. It's so annoying.
Yeah, doing it.
Yeah, Udinese is probably the last, you know, defending team.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but he didn't even want to be the manager. Do you remember that story? That he was offered the managerial position. He's like, yeah, I don't want it. No, they're like, no, you're going to be the manager. He's like, okay. And now Gotti's like trying to purposely play terrible football so he doesn't get hired again.
This is what was angering me. Like, Allegri was working out fine. Like, why did you get rid of him for this progressive style of football? Like, Conte was like, okay, we're going to try to be cheeky. No, guys, just know how to defend. It's really...
Hashtag bring back Catenaccio.
No, bring back Allegri, I think, may have been the theme of the podcast as well.
While we're talking about these teams at the bottom, I just... That Crotone game against Torino, the last moments of it was something wild. Thomas Rincon just this absolutely horrific challenge on Adam Unas, straight red card, completely justified. But then Unas, there's a scuffle, both sort of benches are involved, everyone's sort of getting into each other's faces. Unas gets up, dusts himself off, and just scores such a good goal, having just taken out, goes between two defenders like they aren't there and puts it in off the post on the far side. It was a really...
making this hand gesture as if he was the one who crafted. It's like, Ceci did nothing. Sit down.
Yeah.
That was all Adam Unas and his individual brilliance.
We'll end it there then, shall we? Thanks so much for joining us on the latest Serie A. I'm sorry it went some weird ways this week. Well, we're not really, because we know you probably had a bit of a gig at home too. But we will be back next week, same time, same place. Ciao for now.